an open-air sacred art and music festival in Tidewater, Oregon, held on August 12th through the 15th. It features a diverse lineup of music, workshops, and presentations across the festival grounds. Beloved will highlight the most cutting-edge electronic music and explore ancient traditions, illustrating the similarities between all of humanity. Again, that's the 9th Annual Beloved Music and Arts Festival, August 12th through the 15th in Tidewater, Oregon. More information can be found online at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. This is Second Monday Labor Radio. You're listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7. This is Labor Radio of, by, and for the working class. And your hosts tonight are Fernando Gapacin from the United Auto Workers and the Oregon School Employees Association, and Ann McDowell from Laborers Union 483. We have a special guest tonight. His name is Jamie Partridge. He's a retired letter carrier and organizer for Communities and Postal Workers United. And I wanted to preface the discussion by saying that for over 2 years, Jamie has been one of the leading spokespeople in a major effort to stop the privatization of the U.S. Postal Service. And Jamie, could you explain why this is such an important struggle?
Sure. actually, it's been about 4 years since about 2012, actually the end of 2011, when the Postmaster General announced that he was going to close half the mail processing plants and half the post offices in the country, mostly rural. And it sparked a huge outcry across the country and resistance to these efforts, which have been ongoing. And we've pushed back a little bit. We've lost almost half the mail processing plants in the country in the intervening time, which means that, of course, the mail is being delayed because there isn't enough capacity to move it as quickly as it used to. And rural post offices, half of them have had their hours cut from 8 to 6 to 4 to 2 hours a day. So the Postal Service is definitely being dismantled, but there's a huge resistance movement, and we've been successful in pushing back, and we're a nationwide coalition of network of coalitions, mostly at the city level, which includes both community groups and postal workers.
One of the things is that the U.S. Postal Service is one of the most venerable institutions in the United States. It literally has helped to keep the United States together. Is that correct?
Well, sure. It started out as a revolutionary institution to tie together the committees of correspondence in 1775, the revolutionary first postmaster general, Benjamin Franklin, and then, of course, the first leaders of the country established subsidies for newspapers because they believed that a democratic country needed as many possible voices heard. And then, of course, the Postal Service has created the Constitution guarantees the establishment of post offices and postal roads. And that piece in the Constitution about postal roads is what meant the expansion of the railroads, which were postal roads, basically, in writing. And then, of course, post offices were established a day apart, that is 10 miles, all across the country as the country expanded westward. And free city delivery was established in 1865 during the Civil War to provide letter correspondence between soldiers and their families. And then free rural delivery was established in the late 1800s on the momentum of the populist movement and the Grange movement. So the Postal Service has been at the center of tying and binding the country together.
It's still the most efficient way to get a message from one place to another, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a universal service obligation, which means that of the 150 million deliveries from the outback in Alaska to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, the same price, the same service, it's the most efficient, affordable service in the world. It's at 47 cents for a first-class stamp, a first-class mail.
And the Postal Service actually has operated efficiently for most of its life and continues to provide the best service in the world in terms of Postal Service availability to Americans. Why is it? Why is there an attempt to now undo such a venerable and efficient institution?
Because it's profitable. Because business wants to take it over. And in the current neoliberal climate, it's part of the latest stage of global capitalism, which is that profits are being made out of cannibalizing public institutions. You know, we can see it happening in education. We see it happening in hospitals. We see it happening with the Postal Service. And it's this privatization march is happening across Europe. And the British or the Royal Post was just privatized a couple of years ago. And fortunately, we've put up some significant resistance, as have the Canadians. But again, $67 billion business, huge infrastructure, 35,000 post offices, 200,000 vehicles, 250 plants. The big corporations want to skim off the profitable portions, bust the unions, drive down wages, and of course leave service in rural communities and low income neighborhoods to just go downhill and be more expensive.
This privatization effort, or to convert public service to private profit, this isn't just a Republican conspiracy. I mean, I know that in 2006, legislation was passed that actually undermined the financial stability of the Postal Service. Didn't both Democrats and Republicans both contribute to that?
Yes, it was passed. It was a bill, the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006 was passed in a lame duck session of Congress late at night by a voice vote. It was a bipartisan effort. And the Postal Service was straddled with a pre-funding mandate so that it has to pay retiree health benefits 75 years in advance, so that $5.5 billion, or 10% of the postal budget, goes to pre-fund retiree health benefits for people who not only don't work for the Postal Service yet, they're not even born yet, and no other company or no other agency is required to do that, and no corporation would do that. But it's put the Postal Service into deep debt, and it's a manufactured crisis, but it's being used, this fake crisis is being used to justify the closures and cuts of the infrastructure and the service.
I know that it seems to me that this is an issue that all working people ought to be rallying around. And I know that Communities and Postal Workers United was a coalition that was created in order to build support to save the U.S. Postal Service. I know that people from other unions have come together. We've sat in and we've closed down or sat in postal processing plants. People have been arrested. There's been a whole movement that has helped to grow not only the postal workers union and the fight for the U.S. Postal Service, but it's helped to build the whole labor movement. Can you sort of unfold how this struggle has developed? Because it also helped to change the union too, didn't it?
Sure. As these local fights developed in 2012, for example, there was a mail processing plant that was scheduled for closure in White River Junction, Vermont, and 600 people showed up to a hearing that the Postal Service, a public hearing that they were required to hold, including the senator, Bernie Sanders, and the governor, and that mail processing plant is still open. In Oregon, we had a mail processing plant in Eugene, that was in Springfield, that was on the chopping block. 300 people showed up for the public hearing there. We have been in struggle in Oregon against the closure of four plants, Bend, Pendleton, Salem, and Eugene. We lost Pendleton and we lost Salem. In fact, Fernando, you and I were involved with a direct action, civil disobedience at the Salem plant. It was scheduled to go down in May of 2012 or 2013. I can't remember now. In any case, we were unsuccessful in our sit-in, our occupation of the mail processing plant in Salem, to keep it open. So now what happens when Salem, when someone wants to send a letter from Salem, one side of Salem to the other side of Salem, and has to come all the way to Portland to be sorted and then trucked all the way back to Salem. The mail processing plant in Pendleton was closed in January of 2015, and now when a letter is sent from one side of Pendleton to the other side of Pendleton, it comes all the way to Portland to be processed and then sent all the way back to Pendleton. So what happened was the Postal Service discovered that they weren't even saving money by closing these plants because the transportation costs involved, not to mention all the fossil fuel carbon emissions, transportation costs were more than what they lost, what they saved in cutting jobs. So we in Oregon have actually been successful in putting pressure on our Congress people, not just to support legislation that would reform or save the Postal Service, but to actually demand a face-to-face meeting with the Postmaster General to make the case that we need these plants open, that we need a moratorium. And the Eugene Springfield plant was scheduled to go down in April. Let's see, it was April? Yeah. Of 2015, and we held a big demonstration down there. And then the next week, our congressional delegation, Walden from the great state of Eastern Oregon, met with the top postal officials and pressed the case for keeping these plants open, and the new Postmaster General put a moratorium on plant closures. So we've had off and on moratoriums, and we just gained another delay. There's another 50 plants that are scheduled to go down. One of them's Bend, one of them's Eugene. But we just gained another delay in the decision of an arbitrator of the American Postal Workers Union contract.
You know, the thing is that when this started.
Oh, you asked me about leadership, didn't you?
Let me just ask the question differently. The thing is that it when you told me and folks began to actually organize here in Oregon to save the U.S. Postal Service, it seemed almost insurmountable. I mean, there had been congressional legislation that had been passed. The country seemed geared towards privatizing public service, And the thing is that this groundswell that was created, and in part, Oregon played a really important role. The National Union didn't seem to be very effective at that time, but we continued to organize locally. So what happened? There was a change in the Union.
Yes, that's what you asked me, and I forgot. A number of the folks that helped create chapters of Communities and Postal Workers United around the country ran for office, national office of the American Postal Workers Union, and won. So we got folks that saw the struggle as a community worker struggle to save the Postal Service in national leadership. And what happened going forward, that was 2 years ago, is that the American Postal Workers Union brought together all four postal unions in a postal union alliance, and then went broader and established a grand alliance to save our public postal service that has reached out to, gosh, it's over 100 national organizations now, you know, everyone from the NAACP to the Alliance for Retired Americans to, you know, Center for Rural Affairs, reaching out to those constituencies which are most impacted by the Postal Service, and of course rural communities and elderly, veterans, communities of color, small businesses, and getting those folks on board in a coalition, both at the Washington level and at the local level. And so we're working hand in glove with the Grand Alliance to build local participation. We have a veterans groups involved. We have a Grange involved. We have the Rural Organizing Project. We have the Alliance for Retired Americans, etc., involved here locally. And also what's happened is that the American Postal Workers Union leadership has insisted that in their contract negotiations, which have happened over the last 2 years, actually, include not just wages, hours, and working conditions inside the post offices, but the establishment of delivery standards, the establishment of processing and saving these processing plants, saving post offices, saving preventing further privatization. And they've launched this campaign to stop the privatization of retail. Many of our listeners know that the Staples office supply stores have a deal with the Postal Service to set up private post offices inside of Staples office supply stores across the country. They have 1,500. They're the largest chain of office supply stores. And so, of course, they use low-wage, high-turnover Staples employees instead of postal employees to handle the people's mail. And it's not only insecure, but it's basically a transfer of the work. In the process, your post offices are getting their hours cut, and people are being told to go to Staples in various parts of the country. So there's been this huge boycott of Staples that has been organized by the American Postal Workers Union. And in their contract award, which they just got from an arbitrator a couple weeks ago, there was a decision, because of all the dust up around the Staples outsourcing, there was a decision by the arbitrator to prevent any further contracting out of retail of the post offices to what are called village post offices or approved shippers or contract stations. It doesn't affect the Staples situation, but I think the Staples situation is actually going to turn around too, because Staples is losing money. They're closing stores. The boycott has been very effective.
This is Labor Second Monday, Labor Radio, on KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7. This is Labor Radio, of, by, and for the working class. We have a special guest, Jamie Partridge, who's an organizer for Communities and Postal Workers United, a coalition national coalition designed to help save the U.S. Postal Service. Jamie, you were talking about this arbitration, and what's so clear is that what started out as a grassroots movement actually created a change within the National Postal Workers Union, which actually then put this issue into their demands for a better contract. And because the postal workers aren't legally allowed to strike, an arbiter made a decision on these contract demands that actually curtailed or slowed down the move to privatize the postal service. Correct?
Yes, they're in three different areas. In terms of closing the mail processing plants, there's a moratorium until April of 2017. In terms of contracting out of trucking, which is a whole issue that we haven't talked about. These highway contract routes, which have been basically moving the work of trucking the mail between cities into the private sector, but also within cities. And this has just happened here in Portland in the last couple of years, where there's an outfit called Dill's Star Route Incorporated that is shuttling the mail between the different mail processing plants in Portland, and it's a padded, corrupt contract that the Postal Service is paying through the nose for. But it's all part of this. But we organized a bunch of protests and blockades and all kinds of stuff to bring this issue to light. What was happening with the private trucking in Portland, and the arbitrator decided to also suspend for the life of the contract any further contracting out of the trucking, and instructed the parties, the union and the Postal Service, to look at all these 8,000 highway contract routes and see which ones could be brought back in-house, because the work was not, the service is not as good, and it's expensive, and of course The arbitrator used language like, this is in respect with respect to the contracting out of retail. He says, during the term of the 2010 agreement, the Postal Service efforts to outsource retail operations led to widespread conflict. So the arbitrator is taking into account all these different ways that we're pushing back, and deciding that if we want labor peace and if we don't want community uprising, we'll put this stuff off for a while, at least to see if the parties can agree to do something different. The union, of course, was waging a shop floor battle as well, with people wearing stickers, wearing union T-shirts on Thursdays, and having pickets outside their post offices, and so despite the fact that the postal workers cannot strike by law, that's always been a threat. We did go on strike in 1970. It was an historic wildcat strike. It was actually the biggest wildcat strike in American history in one institution, and we got collective bargaining out of that. And the kind of wages, hours, and working conditions that we have now.
One thing I wanted to get, because in the next 8 minutes are really two things that I think are important, is that Congress in H.R. 5714 is trying to eliminate door delivery.
Yep.
And could you, in the last few minutes,
sure,
talk about two things? One, the importance of door delivery, and lessons that we've learned from the Canadians.
Sure. The door delivery goes to one-third. 40 million addresses get delivery of mail at the door, and that includes businesses and residents. And the Postal Service is and Congress are, in a bipartisan manner, are putting forward this H.R. 5714, which would eliminate at the door delivery. And of course, the reason is to cut costs and using this fake financial crisis. In fact, the Postal Service is not broke. The Postal Service is actually making a surplus except for this debt. But in any case, there would be tens of thousands of letter carrier jobs lost, of course, when you have people having to walk a block or two to a cluster box to get their mail. The service would have a huge impact, especially on the frail and elderly who would have to be walking in the, in the rain and the dark, whatever, to get their mail. And then, of course, the impact on businesses would be. I mean, if you eliminate at the door delivery, why would you ship using the Postal Service if you have to go down the block to get your mail? Why would you ship with the postal or your packages or ship your packages? Why would you, when you could get UPS or FedEx or Amazon to bring it directly to the door? So we're trying to put together a coalition of all those folks, that would be severely impacted, and to look at what the Canadians have been able to accomplish when they were faced with the same problem. Their Canada Post decided to impose what they called community mailboxes on everyone in Canada starting last year. And the union organized at the community level to fight it. They took postal workers off the job, paid them lost wages to go door knocking, to hold rallies and demonstrations, and to get city councils to pass resolutions, and to they used all kinds of creative direct action, like destroying community post office boxes and planting gardens where there was supposed to be a cluster box established, things like that. And they actually were so successful in building local opposition to elimination of at-the-door delivery that it turned the national election. They had the Liberal Party had as a major platform in their election campaign the preservation at-the-door delivery. They won the election, and they stopped the attempt to eliminate at-the-door delivery. So we're going to the letter carriers national convention next week with a resolution to imitate what the Canadians are doing in fighting at-the-door delivery, because it's just not enough to elect the, quote, right people to do the right thing, because this is bipartisan, this attack. And what we have to do, I mean, it came out of committee with a unanimous support for this bill. So what we have to do is we have to organize at the grassroots level to put pressure on these Congress people in the communities that they come from.
You mean to make them do the right thing?
Yeah, to make it hard for them to get away with this, to make it very visible in their face.
This arbitration, which is very instrumental and a real boost to the fight to stop privatization, this was part of the new American Postal Workers Union contract. I know that the letter carriers and the national postal mail handlers are still negotiating.
Right.
What possible things could we possibly see that might come out of those negotiations?
Oh, well, they have not. They've gone past their contract expiration and have continued to negotiate because they were waiting to see what was going to come out of the APW, the American Postal Workers Union, arbitration. And I would think that there would be a settlement soon. There was really good language, both in terms of this outsourcing and privatization suspensions, but also the Postal Service has been successful in establishing a 20% bottom tier workforce in the letter carrier craft. It's called the city carrier assistants, and they're low paid, they're low benefit, and there's been a 54% turnover rate among this new tier, And the American Postal Workers Union got a similar postal support employee in their last contract, and they got a lot of language that brings these people into career status, raises their benefits, and so I'm thinking that whatever comes out of the settlement of the letter carriers and the mail handlers, it'll certainly be along the lines of what the American Postal Workers Union was able to accomplish.
Well, it really seems that this is a great example of how unions and community interact around a focused campaign, which actually created reform within the union institution itself, mm-hmm. and through a real aggressive contract campaign, actually changed the direction of service and strengthened postal workers. And I think there's just huge examples of lessons and things that can be drawn from this. And I still go back to remembering how we just organized on the ground locally, and this thing was happening all around, and it just blossomed into what seems to be a really positive direction for U.S. Postal Service.
Let the listeners know that if folks want to get involved with this struggle, you can go to our website, which is cpwunited.com, cpwunited.com, or email us at cpwunited1@gmail.com. And we have a Facebook page also, Portland Communities and Postal Workers United.
Thank you very much, Jamie. You've been a great guest, and I appreciate it. This is Labor Radio, Second Monday Labor Radio on KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7. This is Labor Radio, up by and for the working class.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.